The sixth case, the United States versus Sanders. Mr. Anderson?
Yes, sir.
I think you're without an opponent, apparently.
Judge has been calling. Can't get him on the phone.
Had he signed in this morning?
Joe.
Right here,
Mr. Smirlinski?
Yes, Your Honor.
I was going to say, he probably feels like Elizabeth Taylor's eighth husband on the wedding night. You know? You know what you're supposed to say, but how are you going to make it interesting?
This will be interesting.
Okay.
Come in from Madison today?
I did, Your Honor.
I'll take a breath.
Yeah, don't.
We've heard it before.
I won't go there, Your Honors. In essence, our appeal presents four issues. I'm of the opinion that we've briefed three of the issues. I really don't want to address argument on that. I'd like to go ahead and just consider the Booker issue. Specifically, what we have in the Booker decision is that the Supreme Court made a ruling as it related to Fifth and Sixth Amendment purposes between a fact that is labeled an element and a fact that is labeled a sentencing factor. The rationale for this basically is that the Fifth and Sixth Amendment requirements apply to any fact that increased the judge's sentencing authority. Well, one of the things, I guess, and perhaps maybe one of the most important aspects of the case is whether the fact is required by the statute or the crime, it didn't matter. Basically, what that holding in Booker was saying is, by a separate sentencing rule that has the effect of increasing the judge's sentencing authority, in essence, what it was doing is it was depriving the defendant of an opportunity to have that fact proven beyond a reasonable doubt. The Booker holding provides the rule, at least according to our perspective, that enhanced sentences require proof beyond a reasonable doubt under the Fifth and Sixth Amendments of the sentencing factors that increase a defendant's a sentence, but only to the extent that such sentence imposed is reasonable. Problem with the Booker case, though, is it doesn't tell us what reasonable is. And I'm not going to try to propose that I know what reasonable is. I really haven't had that much time to digest the case. But one thing that I do know is that the Beyer opinion basically said that it severed Section 3553B1 and 3742E from the Sentencing Reform Act. That made the sentencing guidelines mandatory. And the problem that we have in our case is that Mr. Sanders proceeded to sentencing without this law in place. And so now, unfortunately, I'm here before you trying to go ahead and arguably present a position on how the court should proceed. Specifically, I think what's appropriate here, and the government has made a supplemental submission under 28J, the United States versus Rodriguez case. It was as of yesterday. And what that case does is it employs a plain error analysis. And specifically, what that analysis focuses on is, was there error? Was the error plain, and did the error affect substantial rights? I will go ahead and entertain argument, Your Honors, if you think it's necessary in the first two elements of the analysis. I think they're satisfied under the facts of this case, and specifically, just so I am detailed enough, I would submit to you that application of the managerial role under the guidelines on a preponderance standard, and also application of determination of the quantity of drugs under the relevant conduct analysis is why we have a Booker error. The real question comes down to the last prong, if you will, of the 52B analysis, and that has to do with whether it substantially affects the rights of a criminal defendant. That is, under the plain error rule of 52B. It's interesting because I think the government submission is right on point in that the Rodriguez case is saying out of the 11th Circuit that, you know what, we don't think this is error that is substantially affecting a defendant's right. Oddly enough, though, there were three other cases cited in that opinion, and I'll let the court take a look at them. I'm sure the court will. United States versus Hughes out of the 3rd Circuit, United States versus Oliver out of the 6th Circuit, and United States versus Crosby out of the 4th Circuit. All of those cases. or Second Circuit, I'm sorry, all those cases basically went ahead and indicated that there should be some kind of procedure or mechanism to go back and revisit that issue.
Which one do you think we should adopt?
Thank you, Your Honor. Crosby. And I'm going to tell you why, Your Honor. I don't think a reviewing court can know whether a judge was going to impose a lesser or greater sentence as it related to that sentence. I can say in our case, Your Honors, Judge Crabb did take a look at the circumstances and did make the remark. It's right in the sentencing transcript. She was saying, I'll state right from the record, it's on page 9 of the transcript, sentencing transcript. Mr. Sanders, you asked me what my goal is in sentencing you and complained about the length of your sentence that you're going to get, for which you're eligible. I think you know, and your last comment indicate that you know, that these guidelines that are in accordance with the statutes that Congress has passed, and a lot more of these, are determined by the legislatures and not the judges anymore. But that's exactly what Booker's asking the district court to do, is to go ahead and sentence Mr. Sanders under the circumstances. I'm just asking for Mr. Sanders to go back to the district court so we can have Judge Crabb take a look at what she thinks factors are relevant. She heard the cases, Your Honor. And I think the Court of Appeals is in a very precarious position in trying to establish how it is she made her decision. We don't know. Booker has basically changed the landscape of criminal law practice. It has made the federal guidelines advisory, not mandatory. It's gone. That system is gone. And that is why the third prong is satisfied on the plain air analysis. That's all I have on that issue, Your Honor, and I guess I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Of course. Thank you, Mr. Smolensky. Mr. Anderson.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Anderson. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in Madison, Wisconsin. I tried this case. I did bring my playbook. There's just a couple points I'd like to make as it relates to this particular case. It's the government's position, obviously, that Mr. Sanders has not met his burden as it relates to the third and fourth prongs of the plain error analysis. The defendant cannot show that the error affected substantial rights. He cannot show that he would have received a different sentence. In fact, the evidence shows that Judge Crabb would not have given a lower sentence but for the guidelines. And Mr. Smolensky did make reference to the sentencing transcript. If I may take a little of it out of context, she did say, the fact is you, meaning Mr. Sanders, face a very long, long sentence. You face this, though, because of the choices that you have made yourself. The fact is that your choices have been extraordinarily poor, and getting involved with the manufacture of methamphetamines was the poorest decision that you made. You engaged in this behavior to try to manufacture methamphetamine, and you did this with your eyes wide open. You made that choice. You wanted to make money, and now you have to pay the price for doing that. She did not say she would have issued a sentence lower or that she, as she has in the past. In fact, in the Botham case, which was heard this week, she did say in that particular case that but for the guidelines, she would have issued an order, lower sentence.
Well, what do you make of Mr. Smolensky's quotes from her comments in the record?
Well, as it relates to the one quote that he pulled out, she also said, a sentence at the bottom of the guideline range is sufficient to hold you accountable for your serious criminal conduct. Now, there's one other aspect of this case. Mr. Sanders faced a 20-year maximum sentence and a 10-year maximum sentence. And Judge Crabb sentenced him to 240 months on one count and 22 months on the other count consecutively. She could have sentenced him to up to 240 months on each count, and she could have done it concurrently had she wanted to go below the sentencing guidelines. Your Honors, the bottom line is the defendant has not met his burden as it relates to the plain error analysis, and we submit that the Sanders sentence should be affirmed without remand.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Smolensky?
I just have a brief response to Mr. Anderson's position. While it's true she could have, would have, whatever, under the guidelines, the simple fact of the matter is she used the guidelines. She was constrained by the guidelines. So if she uses the guidelines, It substantially affects his penal interest. Mr. Anderson's argument as it relates to what actually happened, while it might appear to have some kind of merit, it doesn't. Because remember, Your Honors know, Booker stands for the proposition that any kind of sentence enhancement has to be found beyond a reasonable doubt, not a preponderance of the evidence. And that's what you had in that decision-making process. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Mr. Anderson. Wish you both a safe trip home, and the case is taken under advisement.
Thank you.